UT celebrates the Lunar New Year right here on campus, and a native band sends a new request during an 8-year-long wait for indigenous remains held by the university. I'm your host this week, Jack Llewellyn, and this is the Texan Recap. Here's what you missed this week. The UT Ancestral Appreciation and Culture Committee recently hosted a Lunar New Year celebration right here on campus. General Life and Arts reporter Joey Clark is here with the story. Thanks for being here, Joey.
Thanks so much for having me.
To start us off, what exactly is the UT Ancestral Appreciation and Culture Committee?
So the UT Ancestral Arts and Culture Committee was originally the Asian American Culture Committee. Yeah, they're basically just the committee part of the Events and Entertainment Club here at UT. They do a bunch of, I guess, Asian American type culture events. So they do the cultivation. Yeah, so they just kind of gather the Asian American community together, you know, fun, interesting parts of Asian culture with, you know, the community here at UT.
Excellent. Could you tell me more about the Lunar New Year celebration itself?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was basically a huge event that they had put on, all sorts of student performances with like martial arts demonstrations, K-pop dance groups, all sorts of dance crews, and they had tons of food there as well. So they had pork dumplings, chow mein, and the whole like ballroom was kind of lined with a bunch of different student groups that were also tabling there, and they had a bunch of different little traditions and games that you could try out. Just get an idea of like how many different cultures like kind of contribute to the idea of Lunar New Year, because I think a big misconception about it is that people call it, you know, Chinese New Year. It actually like a lot of different Asian cultures celebrate it too.
I know you spoke to the committee's event coordinator. What were some of the things they told you?
Yeah, so they just talked about how you pull an event like this together, like, you know, considering how many people, you know, have to come together to put together the event. You have to communicate with, you know, the student groups that make the performances, making sure that they're ready and they, you know, answer all their questions as well. And then also the catering an event, it can be a huge like headache too as well. So, yeah, so we talked about that. And then also, you know, what I mentioned earlier too, like how do you cover the whole Pan-Asian traditions and make sure everyone feels represented? So I think that Leslie, the event coordinator, I think it was a big, like really important to her that everyone feel represented and welcomed at the event. And honestly, I mean, definitely paid off. It was definitely just a really dynamic and vibrant atmosphere.
In your article, you also mentioned some other organizations you talked with. What did you learn about what they do?
Yeah, so I talked with the Texas Diabolo Association, which is Diabolo is a Chinese yo-yo. And I talked with Texas Wushu. So I'll talk about, I guess, Texas Wushu first. They're a Chinese martial art group as well. And so they train together and then, you know, put on these performances as well. They had a big line dancing element. So I talked to one of the group members, and he had actually donated one of the lion heads to kind of get them into doing lion dancing as well. And it was clear to me that he had also like kind of grown up around like lion dancing as well. Like, I think it's one of the most like central parts of like Lunar New Year in people's heads. I mean, it's most exciting as well because they really get into the crowd and everybody gets into it as well. And the groups that were there, like, were throwing like prizes out of the lion's mouth. I don't think there's like anything really like lion dancing in maybe American culture, because it goes back so far, the tradition. So it's something that people have been doing for centuries. And so to carry on like a tradition, I think, is very, very important to people. I can definitely tell that it was very, very exhilarating and like special experience for them. And then I also talked with the Texas Diabolo Association. And yeah, I always see them practicing with their yo-yos on Speedway. And I talked with the founder and president of the club, and she was very, very, very passionate and very, very nice person. So I learned a lot about like Chinese yo-yos, like the different kinds you can buy, like the ones that light up that you can do 1, 2, 3 at like a single time. And you could tell when people were performing, like how much they love it. You know, everyone had like a huge smile on their faces. And it was just like so, so exciting, especially for like the crowd, like kind of giving back to them, like the energy that they were putting out to the crowd as well. So it was just really, really great to see.
Well, I think that about does it. That was General Life and Arts reporter Joey Clark. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Mayakan Garza Band continues to send in requests for the repatriation of remains that UT has not yet returned. Senior news reporter Aaron Sullivan is here to tell us all about it. Thanks for joining me, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
To begin, could you tell me about the Mayakan Garza Band? What exactly are they?
Yeah, so they're a group. It's actually like a few families that are from the Central Texas area. They're a state-recognized tribe based mainly in San Marcos. And more specifically, they're a band of people from the Cuilticon people who lived in Texas and northeastern Mexico when the Spaniards first arrived here.
Why does the Mayacan Garza band want these remains?
So first and foremost, they want the remains so that they can rebury them. One of my sources said that the Mayacan Garza believe that the physical and the spiritual processes that happen after death are kind of interrupted when remains are exhumed or disturbed. But another thing is like the Mayacan Garza also believe that these remains are their tribe's ancestors. Dr. Mario Garza from the Mayacan Garza, he's one of the people from the tribe. He said that they have very specific ways of burying their dead. They bury them in the fetal position facing the east. And so these remains that UT has in their collection were buried that way. Another thing about these remains is that they're over 1,000 years old. And Garza said that the Mayacan Garza band was the only tribe near San Marcos when this burial happened.
Now, you go over the Native American Grave Protection and Repatriation Act in your story. Could you explain what that is?
Yeah, so the act is more colloquially known as NAGPRA. It came into effect in 1990, and it basically regulates indigenous remains and artifacts that are found on public lands in the United States. It's a federal law, so any institution that receives any sort of federal funding must comply with its standards. And so institutions like museums and universities essentially have to work within certain guidelines to facilitate any requests for remains that these tribes are requesting. And just last month, actually, there were a few new changes that gave these tribes more authority and more of a presence in these repatriation cases.
Now, in your article, you also explain why UT hasn't yet given them these remains. Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, so the Mayacan Garza actually made their first request for these remains back in 2016. And then the next major development was from the university side. They wrote a letter to the tribe in 2020, kind of giving two main reasons why they weren't going to return the remains. So first, some federally recognized tribes in Texas objected to the Mayacan Garza's request, and the university said they kind of have to consider those requests as a part of their decision on whether or not to return the remains. The interesting thing about that, though, is that like most of these federally recognized tribes that are objecting don't actually want the remains. Like they're not saying like, oh, well, we want them over the Mayacan Garza. Dr. Garza, the person who I interviewed from the tribe, he basically said that some of these federally recognized tribes are just objecting to push around the non-federally recognized tribes like the Mayacan Garza. The second reason that the university gave was that they couldn't culturally identify the remains as belonging to Mayacan Garza ancestors. And this is also kind of interesting given the assertion that the Mayacan Garza have given that they were the only tribe in this part of Texas at this time, and the very specific way that they bury their people and the way that these remains were found.
Now, you had mentioned talking to a member of the tribe and sort of like their Indigenous Culture Institute and whatnot. So what else did they say?
So it's actually kind of interesting. The Indigenous Culture Institute has been successful in the past getting these requests, getting the remains actually back to them. Texas State University in San Marcos actually repatriated remains to them back in 2011. Whenever they do receive repatriated remains, they have a new reburial ceremony that kind of draws upon their traditional Mayacan Garza burial practices. And they actually rebury a lot of the remains that they get repatriated to them at a reburial site in San Marcos. And kind of the biggest thing that stuck out to me in my reporting, Dr. Garza, the one, my main source, he essentially said that NAGPRA, the federal law that regulates this, has some serious flaws that allows institutions like the University of Texas to find loopholes, just kind of letting them kick this can down the road for as long as they can.
That was senior news reporter Aaron Sullivan. Thanks so much again for your time.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
And that's the Texan Recap for the week of February 5th. I'm Jack Llewellyn. The Texan Recap is a production of the Daily Texan Audio Department. If you liked this episode, make sure to subscribe to the Daily Texan on your streaming platform of choice and follow us on Twitter at Texan Audio. This episode was hosted and supervised by me, Jack Llewellyn, and edited by Amrutha Mumidi. Special thanks to Joey Clark and Aaron Sullivan for their reporting, and to Joel DiPaolo, Mimi Calzada, and Chloe Moore for contributing to this project. Cover art is by Emma Burke, and music is by Top Flow Productions. To read the news stories in this episode or see more from The Texan, head on over to www.thedailytexan.com. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.